Okay, John was too young to enlist at the start of the war, wasn't he? But he did some other things before he could enlist. Can you tell
Now,
us?
he had enlisted, but because there was a big waiting list to be called up, he filled in the time. He had finished his accounting, but he couldn't do anything about that. So he filled in his time by going volunteering for the Horse Remount Squadron, which was stationed at Liverpool, Narellan area. And he was retraining racehorses for army duty in Egypt. And he did that for about 8 months. And then he was called up for the Air Force, and he went to Bradfield and received his uniform and everything. Then he went to Narrandera for training, and then after he'd finished that course, that really only went up to the end of learning to fly, and then he was sent to Canada, and where he was at London, Ontario, and he was training on the he did his training on the elect the Venturers. But by the time the week it took him getting to England by a ship, there wasn't any more left to fly, so he had to retrain again. And that's when he did his training on the Mitchell bombers. And they had a 1 in 3 chance of being damaged badly or shot down. So it was a bit daunting, really. Anyhow, he was posted to an RAF squadron because there was no Australian squadrons flying those planes. Anyhow, he spent the rest of his time in Europe flying Mitchells. He did, and where he had to stay until 1946, because he was test pilot for the first Meteor jet, the single engine one that John Whipple built. But he he was told the day he took it off that it pulled to the left on taking off, because they had runners along the ground and that. But he said, John Whipple said to him, "I have no idea how it lands," which was a bit daunting. Anyhow, he stayed there till then, but he had done a few other fly. He didn't have a logbook he could bring home, but he had done a few other things, like he flew the British Foreign Minister to Belsen the day it was relieved. He flew him because he was one who could fly the smaller plane that would fit into the aerodrome, airfield near Belsen. Anyhow, that's, I think, when what he saw in that helped give him post-traumatic stress, so that when he came home, there was no way he was going to fly again. So he got out of the Air Force for about 6 months, and they asked him to go back in as an accountant because they were forming the permanent Air Force, and they knew he was an accountant before he joined up. he had been qualified as an accountant. So that was how he went back into the Air Force. And then he stayed in the permanent Air Force till he retired in 76, so he had a long career. We moved all around Australia in that period, and also during that period he served in the Korean War for 15 months. He was stationed between Korea and Japan for 15 months, and was awarded 2 United Nations medals, which are in his medals. And that then got out, we travelled quite a bit. But just 6 weeks before he died in 2015, he was awarded the Legion of Honour medal for his flights in the French, over the French territory, in helping to can't think of a word.
To liberate Europe.
And he, that's that sort of, and I think he forced himself to stay alive because we have 6 great-grandsons and they all wanted to, asked him for a long time, from the time he knew he was getting it, when are you going to get your medal? Because they were all anxious, and he was anxious to get it for the boys' sake.
So that was a special presentation here at the Cotswolds, wasn't
yes,
it?
Yes, at the Cotswolds, yes. And the whole of the village came, and the manager put on a beautiful afternoon tea and a function with flowers, the colours of the French, and one of the officers from the French embassy came and presented it to him. So during his time in the permanent RAF, he travelled all around Australia. He was stationed. We moved about every 2 years.
So when he went to Canada, on the way to Europe, he met some interesting people, I think, didn't he?
Oh, very interesting. Actually, he was stationed at London, Ontario. It was near Niagara Falls. And Niagara Falls, there was a bus run down to New York. And from there, it was only 2 or 3 hours, I think. And every time he had a weekend off, he went down to New York for the weekend. The first time he went, it was a club for officers of the services, and he met up with. They asked him when he went in what he'd like to do, and he said he'd like to go riding, because he enjoyed. He had spent so much time with the horses, and that anyhow they said for him to come to the desk at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and someone would take him where he could go riding. Anyhow, he fronted up at 4 o'clock, and there was the daughter of the Chase family. They were a private bank. the father was the head of the Chase Bank, and the mother was a Rockefeller. So from then on, he was asked there to stay whenever he came down, or else he would stay with Mendelssohn, the music publishers at the time, in a big penthouse on Park Lane. He would stay out at Poughkeepsie, which was the holiday place for all the Americans, with the Chase family. He had had a wonderful time. He never had to worry about anything, you know, about finding accommodation or anything, At one stage, they had made arrangements for him to stay with Mendelssohn one weekend, but he had to go away suddenly on family problems, and he made arrangements for him and booked him into a very prominent club in New York. It was for all the millionaires, and apparently there were very high fees and everything there, but he, booking him in, everything was paid, and he found this big bowl of chips for the slot machines that they had there, and they insisted that he use them. But the thing was, they paid about every second time, because apparently in those days millionaires didn't like losing money, so they made them that they always won on them. So he came out with a pocket full of money. And
so when he went to Europe, he was flying, and he's mentioned in the war history, isn't he, as having flown one of the number of missions, or large number. But he also had some interesting experiences with missions. And...
Oh, yes, on one mission. When they were attacking a target, there were two groups of planes assigned to each target. Oh, only a few planes in each group. But if the first group destroyed the target, the other, it was a court-martial effect, that if the other target had to find another built-up area and drop their bombs. Of course, you can't take bombs back and land with them, because they'll blow up. And anyhow, he found, all he could find was this little village, which he could see the children running out of school to the mothers. And he said there was no way he could order bombs dropped on there, on the women and children. So he gave the wrong coordinates, and they were all dropped out in the field. But of course, all the others in his little group knew that he'd done the wrong thing. And one of the ones in the group was the son of one of the British cabinet ministers. And he was worrying about it, because he had the briefing officer said he couldn't hear him and everything, so of course he didn't want to put him down for a court-martial. Anyhow, he felt it was going to come back and bite him at some time. And when he was introduced to the British Foreign Minister, when he was flying him to Belsen, he said, "Oh, you're the Thompson." And he knew then that it was out. And he must have looked upset, because he said to him, "Oh, don't worry, it's gone as far as Churchill." And he said he would have done the same thing. So from then on, he didn't have to worry about that.
And he had some interesting experiences at Belsen, meeting the Russian foreign minister.
Oh, yes, foreign minister was there. And he was introduced to him and he put out his hand to shake hands. But the Russian turned round to the interpreter and asked him what his rank was. And the interpreter asked John his rank and he said it. But by the time they got back to the foreign minister and that, he'd withdrawn his hand. And he said if he had to be a high enough rank in the Russian's eyes, well, there was no way he was going to put out his hand again to have it shaken. So he didn't put it out. So the Russian had to just drop his and that.
So Belsen and I guess all the other experiences had quite an effect on him.
Oh, it did. He said it was shocking. Of course, he saw it before anyone was moved out. He wasn't allowed to do anything for anyone, like give a bit of water, there was doctors there and they wouldn't let any treatment start because within a few hours there was going to be a field hospital built there, which it was. And they were all moved out into the field hospital and then they gave them everything they needed and looked after them and that. And they said that by not giving it in the prison camp, it would do them much more being given to them when they're free.
That was excellent.